Junction. Bumangon Pepe ni Iluminado Lucente. Hindi pa buo ang aming kaligayahan na sa laylayan iyong iniwan. Bangon, tumayo ka sa iyong himlayan, tumungo sa amin at tubusin sa aming kahirapan. Malungkot, may sakit ang inang bayan, dumadaloy ang kanyang luha ng walang humpay. Nangangarap pang makita ang kanyang anak, nagmamahal at nagtitiis sa hangarin. Iniisip mo noon na sa iyong pagpanaw, darating ang hinahangad na kaligayahan. Wala. Madilim, mapanglaw ang aming kinabukasan. Sa lalim ng sakit, nagtitiis pa rin. Totoong ang mga salita ng iyong pamamaalam. Sa pagpanaw, mamahinga sa buhay na hindi inaasahan. Kundi lisanin muna ang karimlan ng himlayan at bumalik at sikaping iligtas kami. Narito kami na paliligiran ng mga naiinggit at nakatali sa pagkaalipin na aming pinapasan. Papayag ka ba, Rizal, na ang Pilipinas lamunin, madurog sa bilangguan ng isang amo? Wala pang pagbubuo ang iyong iniwan, hindi na buo ang aming kaligayahan. Balikan mo kami, iligtas sa aming pagkaalipin, balikan ng makalas ang mabagsik ng ngipin.
So ayun, magandang gabi po. Kamusta naman kayo, Eugene Wilmore? Kamusta ang mga PhilHealth nyo? Nagbabayad ba kayo on time?
Okay naman, nagbabayad yung sa amin. Tsaka wala akong ibang government ID, PhilHealth lang. Kaya pag nagsara yan, wala na akong ID. Your partner in health, and health is wealth.
Oo nga, grabe yung issue dyan sa PhilHealth. Kung ano-ano nang nangyayari sa bansa natin ngayon, meron pa mga tumatakbong ostrich sa lansangan. Ano ba yun? Okay, sige. So, sa kabila ng lahat, nandito pa rin tayo para ituloy itong ating podcast, Patuloy Lang Ang Buhay. Welcome, guys. At ngayong nasa MECQ pa rin naman tayo. Kayong pa man, simulan na natin itong episode 8.
Ibang timpla na naman natin ngayon para sa episode 8. Exciting at the same time nakakapanibago.
Parang ibang timpla ngayon kay si Will.
Ayun, kasi nga for the first time multidisciplinary discussion natin ngayon. Title pa lang eh, ang ganda na interesting. At mahalaga yung mga ganitong scholarly work eh, para sa mga guro at mag-aaral o sino mang interesado sa pag-aaral at pagkatuto ng panitikan ng Pilipinas.
Yung discussion niya kasi tumutuhog sa poetry, criticism, situation ng ating regional literature, at syempre kung paano ito nakatahi sa ating politika, sensibilidad, kultura at pagka-Pilipino.
Oo nga eh. Politics of Forgetting, Preliminary Notes on Waray Poetry After the Balangiga Encounter of 1901. Interesting to, pero Will, sino nga ba ang guest natin ngayon? Nabrowse ko yung preliminary notes eh, may part doon na sinabing, "Only that which never ceases hurting stays in the memory." Parang bagay kay Casey yun.
Bagay talaga yun ako sa na kanya, kasi nga, ibig sabihin noon sa Filipino, yun lamang may mga natitirang kati sa isip at puso ang nagiging bahagi ng ating alaala. So Casey, yun ang lesson doon, maging makati. Anyway, ayun, bago kung saan tayo mapunta sa ating usapan, pakilala lang natin ang ating guest. Kilala to ni Casey Eugene kasi nakasabay namin siya dati noong nanood kami rin ng Sinimalaya Film Festival years back. Isa siyang literature teacher, writer, editor, scholar, ang master ng asong si Claude. Galing pa nga to sa Greece eh, may lahi siya ng mga scholar at pilosopo. Walang iba kundi si Sir Ian Harvey Claro. Sir, kamusta po kayo? At maraming salamat sa pagpayag na mag-guest sa episode na ito ng Lit Junction.
Hi Will, Eugene at Casey, maraming salamat sa pagpapaunlak.
Ano ka ba Will, nung Sinimalaya, nagkita na rin kami ni Ian. Pero hindi lang doon. Nung buwanong wika din, nag-talk kami sa isang private school sa Makati. Nakasama ko rin siya. Kasama ka rin namin dapat noon, kaso nga late ka pa rin as usual. Hello Ian, kamusta naman?
Okay naman, ito, nagtitiis sa pandemic.
Yes, welcome nga Ian. Naalala ko nga rin yung pagtatalk natin na yun. 2018 ata yun, kung di ako nagkakamali.
2017.
Ah, 2017. Yun, sa, nakalimutan ko na yung school, basta isang private school. Nakahabol ako noon, hindi ko na ata naabutan si Ian. Pero naabutan ko nga doon si Casey at ako yung huling nag-lecture. Anyway, kung di ako nagkakamali, ito si Ian, literature major at waray din siya. So, tamang-tama sa discussion niya sa atin ngayong gabi, pakinggan natin siya mamaya-maya.
Oo nga, last time, literature majors din. Parang tatlo na yung guest natin na literature major so far.
Yes, literature majors and teachers nga ang nagiging guest natin recently.
Mm-hmm. Okay, at dahil nga dyan, so simulan na natin. Sir Ian, the ball is yours po. Makikinig na po kami sa inyong lecture.
Politics of Forgetting, Preliminary Notes on Waray Poetry After the Balangiga Encounter of 1901. This lecture is a part of an ongoing project where I examine creative representations of the Balangiga Encounter in 1901 within the rubric of memory studies. Concomitantly, I also inhabit the vernacular as a site of understanding memory, aside from its global constructions. In this way, the vernacular becomes a co-producing agent in the concept of memory from a particular set of predicaments. The Balangiga Encounter refers to the locally led attack against American soldiers stationed in a local town in Samar during the final week of September 1901. While the people of Samar had an amicable relationship with the new colonizers, the locals of Balangiga were eventually displeased and enraged with the Americans' teeming militarization, which resulted in limited food supply and forced labor. In response to this, the men and women of the town orchestrated an attack against the Americans. Taking the Americans by surprise, the people of Balangiga were able to defeat the 74 soldiers of the elite Company C troopers who earlier succeeded in quelling the Boxer Rebellion in China. More than half of the company became casualties, including its ranking officials, and the other 20 wounded. Keen observers of the then-nascent American Empire noted this event as a major blow to its status as a global and military power. Of course, this loss did not come without retaliation. Americans stationed more soldiers in Samar under General Jacob Smith, who infamously and ruthlessly commanded a kill-and-burn order to reduce Samar into a howling wilderness. Intending to yield alternative readings of literature and film that feature the Balangiga Encounter, this topic on the politics of forgetting is purely accidental. When my thesis readers pointed out that there lies a lacuna in my study because I immediately explore 21st century texts such as Merlia Lunan's anthology Running with Ghosts and Other Poems and Candela Cruz's film Howling Wilderness. Apparently, I miss out the literary production in the years right after the tragic event in 1901, a period which coincided with what literary historians bequeath as the golden age of Waray literature. In this lecture, I plan to tread a genealogy of forgetting based on Western theoretical debates and the vernacular terrain. I will also examine possible hypotheses which explain the characteristic silence of the early 20th century poets, Waray poets, regarding the Balangiga Encounter. Afterwards, based on the synergy of these ideas, I will provide a reading of Iluminado Lucente's poem, Pagbangon Pepe or Bumangon Ka Pepe. Originally, the project surveys poetic works of Casiano Trinchera, Norberto Romualdez, and Iluminado Lucente, esteemed members of the Sanghiran Sambinisaya, a literary circle that ushered progress in creative and linguistic pursuits of Samar and Leyte. While their works do not explicitly mention the incident, They were selected and curated because they articulate themes of romance, longing, mourning, and nationalism, modes of thinking and feeling which foreground the aftermath of the traumatic event. In Plato's Meno, Socrates provides an overview into the position of memory in the ancient world which affects prejudices against forgetting. I quote, "Socrates, well, go on to consider mental qualities. You acknowledge the existence of the qualities called self-control, justice, courage, cleverness, memory, nobility, and so on and so forth." End quote. Without question, Socrates, who unpacks the factors of human excellence, upholds memory in a pedestal of desirable human qualities. Forgetting, being its complete opposite, is effectively relegated to a lower rank. Centuries after, French thinker and philosopher and political writer Ernest Renan delivers a lecture entitled "What is a Nation?", which counters Plato's treatment of memory. He writes, "Forgetting, I would even go as far as to say historical error, is a crucial factor in the creation of a nation, which is why progress and historical studies often constitute dangers for the principle of nationality." End quote. Indirectly, Rena intervenes in the conversation between Socrates and Meno by citing the potential of forgetting in the formation of national consciousness. In fact, he brings forgetting in the broad spheres of political engagement when he cites that the French people would no longer bother about their divisive historical origins, but simply focus on their being French. Conversely, this line of thought has its own follies because it silences and discriminates multiple subjectivities so that a monolithic identity may emerge as a master quality that unites everyone to nationhood. Inasmuch as there is potential in forgetting, there is also danger. German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche extends Rena's confidence in forgetting through a thesis of distrust on memory seen in his argumentation in On the Genealogy of Morals and On the Uses and Disadvantages of History for Life. He famously wrote, "If something is to stay in memory, it must be burned in. Only that which never ceases hurting stays in the memory." Burning memory as forgetting indicates a refusal to be completely shaped and controlled by a troubling past. While it may be an apparent plea for escapism, Nietzsche's consistent thoughts on memory tediously builds the case for forgetting. For him, an oversaturation with history and memory can be hostile and dangerous to life because it creates confusion, ironies, and excesses that weakens one's personality. His pessimism against memory would go on as far as calling it a repugnant spectacle where a man envelops himself in an odor of decay. On the contrary, in this essay on guilt, bad conscience, and related matters, the German philosopher optimistically defends that, quote, "forgetfulness is not just a vis inertiae or mere stubbornness because it initiates a conscious intake of realities based on what the mind can take." He poetically renders forgetting as, I quote, "to shut down the doors and windows of consciousness for a while, not to be bothered by the noise and battle which our underworld of serviceable organs work with and against each other. A little peace, a little tabula rasa of consciousness to make room for something new. Above all, for nobler functions and functionaries, for ruling, predicting, and predetermining," end quote. This passive discourse from Nietzsche appears to be anathematic, uncharacteristic to say the least, for a philosopher who invoked the death of God, the will to power, and the Übermensch, which are staple ideas in continental philosophy. However, it is through this unconventional take in forgetting where it finds its value in the pursuit of, quote, "happiness, cheerfulness, hope, pride, and immediacy," end quote. Forgetting is necessary for everyone to exist because one cannot be pinioned down by a plethora of realities, expressions, and pasts. He also adds that it is not a passive inability, but a will of memory, which one dictates one's own futures. 19th century Western thinkers such as Renan and Nietzsche turned their back from the classical presumption of memory, drawing heavily on the points of Nietzsche, contemporary interlocutors of forgetting who include Paul Connerton and Leda Asman expanded significance according to broad contexts that enrich the debate between memory and forgetting. For instance, Connerton acknowledges that the complexity of forgetting by declaring that it is not just a simple unitary phenomenon unlike how it was construed classically. In his essay enumerating the 7 types of forgetting, it includes legal injunctions, the perils of consumerist capitalism, and the deficit surplus of knowledge which lead people not to remember. Connerton adds that forgetting constitutes a formation of a new identity, which is not much of a loss entailed in being unable to retain certain things, as rather on the gain that accrues to those who know to discard themselves. Resonating much from Nietzsche, forgetting allows a society or an individual to manage their own identity based on a particular frame which both remembers and forgets certain details. Aleida Asman continues Connerton's investigations by citing that both remembering and forgetting should not easily be treated as a binary opposition, though they have an apparent asymmetrical relationship because they are both needed in coping with life. However, she distinguishes forgetting as a default mode of humans, which does not require concerted effort, unlike remembering, which avoids the veto against destructive power. In Asman's forms of forgetting, there are 2 examples which elucidate the case of Balangiga massacre's representation. The first is selective forgetting, which is due to the natural limitations of memory as a rare resource that it cannot remember everything. Pointing out the intimacy of remembering and forgetting, Asman writes, "For this reason, all processes of remembering include various shades of forgetting, such as neglecting, overlooking, and ignoring. In other words, the gap created by forgetting are an integral part of remembering, providing its contours." In the case of Balangiga's presence in the early 20th century Waray poetry, selective forgetting means that the historic encounter has been overlooked in both the political and literary imagination of the writers. Examining their position in Samaran's latest political economy, these poets belong to the upper echelon of Waray society, which is a direct contradistinction from the social class of the Balangiga encounter's dissidents. More than an act of remembrance, their framing of nationalist imagination contracts their political and economic subjectivity, which resurface in their creative work. The other form of constructive forgetting is a hopeful type of forgetting, which supports and breaks and lays the ground and has a new beginning. Asman also labels this as tabula rasa, from a new political beginning. Coming from this perspective, the elite patrons of Waray poetry, through their explicit forgetting of the Balangiga encounter, desires to constellate a new political landscape as seen in their poetic articulation. Inasmuch as they signal a discourse on forgetting, broadly they usher new beginnings that set aside complicated and traumatic memories to inaugurate themselves as leaders in Samaran's latest political horizon. Turning to Francis Bacon, Asman quotes, quote, "When you carry the light into one corner, you darken the rest, as if to imply natural consequences between negotiation of memory and forgetting." The vernacular terrain of Philippine languages concurs that forgetting is inextricable with memory. De La Rosa's Diccionario Bisaya Español, Samar y Leyte, 1895, defines limot, or forget, as olvidar, huirse de la memoria una cosa, olvidarse entre la mente de ella, to forget, run away from memory of one thing, entirely forget about one person. The De La Rosa definition reveals that Waray embodies Connerton's active forgetting, where there is a concerted effort not to remember, as seen in the phrase, to run away from memory. Sample sentences of the Waray lexicon also show the inverse relation of forgetting and memory in the following litotic statements. Ayaw ikaw kalimutsan akon tugon. Do not forget my orders. Di riniyo hihikalimtan ang pagtuman sa mga buhat nga kaupayan. You'll never forget good acts. And number 3, diri ako malilimot. I will not forget. Expressed through negation, the permutations of limot as kalimot, hihikalimtan, and malilimot consistently express desire and intent to remember. Mentrida's lexicographic catalog of forgetting in the Panay Islands retains its Waray counterpart. However, limot is seen as a vulnerability through the Spanish word desmemoriado or forgetful, which the dictionary explicitly explains that it may be caused by enfermedad, illness, or vejez, old age. Comparably, the Hiligaynon language reflects the distrust and pessimism of forgetting. In the same vein, Tagalog echoes the same sentiments of Limot's entry in the Noseda and Sanlúcar dictionary, which states, pagiging malilimutin, pagiging walang ingat, descuido, being forgetful, being careless. More than its construction of limot as a careless trait, the Tagalog lexicon also outlines how forgetting distances from the Austronesian nuance of memory, dum-dum, which circumscribes the notion of care as in the act of remembering. By being forgetful, one abandons care for what ought to be remembered. As Pilera's 1965 catalog of Bahasa Malaysia, Bahasa Indonesia, and Tagalog notes how different Filipinos articulate forgetting as compared to its regional and linguistic neighbors. She notes that while two countries define lupa as forgetting, only the Philippines refers to it as land. According to the Wilkinson 1959 bilingual dictionary, lupa in Bahasa Malaysia means to forget, to be unmindful of God, to be detached from one's own surroundings, and to some extent to lose one's head. The sample proverb heightens the distrust on forgetting. It is the mouse deer that overlooks the snare. It is never the snare that overlooks the mouse deer. Configured as a proverb of warning, the one who remembers and who forgets falls into the vicious relationship between predator and prey, as if to imply that forgetting is fatal or dangerous. On the other hand, Noced and Sanlúcar's exploration of the word lupa does not match Bahasa Malaysia and Indonesia. Through the word linulupa, lupa may signify knowledge of a land's flora and fauna or ownership of a parcel of it. Like any other field of human knowledge, forgetting is a discursive formation and a space of contestation. It can work within knowing and not knowing, forced and natural, and productive and otherwise. The genealogy of forgetting reveals that it is not insulated from material conditions and sociological factors that shape it. Numerous hypotheses can describe and explain their lack of mention of the Balangiga massacre in early 20th century Waray poetry. Eva Hoffman and Marian Hirsch would defend the Sanghiran as the first generation who transmits trauma through silence and bodily affective intimations, a position which explains why artistic projects a century after the event are bolder and more confident in addressing the ethical quandaries of the event. As a corollary, it dispels the problematic insinuation that the current generation do not have the authority to speak about the martial law, a historical event they were either too young to remember or were not born yet. The actual generations of victims are burdened by trauma that they are reduced to silence. However, the succeeding generations have the power and the task to ensure that their narratives continue to be present in the many discourses that shape the nation. Despite being alive during that era, the members of the Sanghiran were not directly affected by the wrath and consequences of the anti-colonial resistance. In fact, it was during this American regime that they landed at prominent local and national posts that secured them from the inconveniences of a subjugated colony. The case of Remembering and Forgetting, the Balangiga Encounter of 1901 in early 20th century Waray poetry, does not seamlessly align to Connerton's idea. For instance, he discusses repressive forgetting, which takes shape as a tall order or a legal enforcement to forget something. While there may be the sedition law, which regulated expression, that may run counter to the American colonial regime, Waray poets such as Trinchera and Lucente have publicly made bold statements on nationalism, which include invoking Rizal, criticizing Samaran Leyte's submission to Cosmopolitan Manila. They produce provoking literary themes and questions that doubt the arrival of a new colonizer. Thus, repressive forgetting still cannot fully pinpoint the dearth of representation of the Balangiga Encounter in 1901. Haitian anthropologist Michelle Rolfe Trillo provides a sharp intervention in the production of history in the context of the Haitian Revolution, where slaves liberated themselves from French colonizers during the late 18th century to early 19th century. In Silencing the Past, Power and Production of History, he narrates that silences are constitutive and integral in the process of historical production, because no single historical writing can chronicle an entire event. Trillo further suggests that the political economy plays a crucial role in the unevenness of what is mentioned and silenced in history. However, he adds that the study of the past can be more path-breaking if it takes into consideration mentions and silences dialectically. Iluminado Lucente's poem, Pagbangon Pepe, Bumangon Ka Pepe in Filipino, thrives in an apostrophic nostalgia that persists to summon Jose Rizal back to life to complete his aborted business of the Philippines. Lucente goes as far as resuscitating iconic tropes and images of Rizal, such as illness and the motherland. The persona confronts Rizal that his martyrdom did not translate to liberation of the Filipino people, such that the same illness that he complained about in Noli Me Tangere remains to cause pain and suffering to his countrymen. The poem would then proceed to invoke the binary opposition between master and slave to describe injustice. At the first moment, the poem is deeply anti-American. It foregrounds the locals-led revolt done in September of 1901. One might even ask, why did the Americans, under the power of surveillance and censorship of the sedition laws, allow this to be published in Samaran Leyte roughly 2 decades after the Balangiga Encounter? Moreover, the mechanism that shaped its forgetting lies in the poem's association with Rizal, who at the end of the day is an American-sponsored hero. Renato Constantino, in his enduring critique of the Rizal cult of personality, points out that Rizal had a strong distrust for an independent Philippines. In truth, he pushed for the Philippines to be part of Spain, with equal representation to the Cortes. From the vantage point of Aleida Asman and Paul Connerton, Iluminado Lucente inaugurates a new political identity of the Filipino people that compromises between nationalism and the American colony. Through his series of metaphoric choices, the poet opts for a subjectivity that finds power through an intimacy with an imperial authority rather than the nation itself. In the Waray sense of limot, or forgetting as an act of running away, Lucente evades the radical politics of the masses that has fueled Bonifacio, the Katipunan, and the Balangiga Encounter of 1901. Despite the event being recorded in global military history, the memory of Balangiga offers a sour option, contrary to the reform-driven Ilustrado imagination and politics. Duke Bagulayas, Jamesonian Literary History of Samar and Leyte, affirms this conclusion. He adds that their influence in the literary production of Samar and Leyte is encompassing, that no less than poet and critic Merle Alunan, I quote, forwards them as the poetic standard, end quote. Among the studies on the Sanghirang Sambinisaya, only Bagulaya was able to precisely describe the overlapping conditions that shape the literary group's motivation and identity, as he writes, I quote, according to Waray critical tradition, the Waray canon is constituted by Iluminado Lucente, Eduardo Macabenta, Casciano Trinchera, Norberto Romualdez Sr., Vicente de Vera, Francisco Alvarado, and Agustin Omora. Most of them come from the inteligencia and the upper classes. Lucente was one-time mayor of Tacloban. Romualdez Sr., who became Associate Justice of the Supreme Court and member of the National Assembly, was of Spanish descent. Alvarado worked as chief of Minit's division of the Philippine Senate. De Vera was a dentist. Macabenta was appointed juez de paz, an interpreter for the court of first instance in Tacloban. This emphasizes that Sanghiran members were luminaries holding powerful posts not only in the provincial setting but also in national politics, like Romualdez Sr. and Alvarado. Moreover, Bagulaya differentiates the Waray inteligencia from the Manila Ilustrado of the 19th century, which includes Rizal, Lopezaina, and Luna. Teeming with their cosmopolitan aspirations, the Manila Ilustrado attempts to equal or surpass the colonial masters, as opposed to Waray intellectuals who rejected colonial influences by reviving their insular culture. However, Bagulaya exposes that being intimate with power has made them prone to a, quote, problematic ideological position, end quote, which are inevitably infused in the spirit of their texts. He adds that, I quote, the disintegration of the revolutionary movement formerly led by the Ilustrados in the face of the American war machine could only lead into a semi-nativist position. While the Sanghiran launched a golden age for Waray literature through its anti-colonial stance, certain contradictions at the core of the collective render this revered period inorganic, inchoate, and underdeveloped. Merle Alunan's observation on Waray literary history, particularly its decline after the 1950, affirmed Bagulaya's Marxist claims on the contestable legacy of the Sanghiran. Despite their concession with the colonial power, the persistence of English and Filipino in public instruction, official government functions, and the mass media would soon contribute to the collapse of Waray language and literature, that no less than Benvenido Lumbera would fall into an error of judgment that Visayan literature is practically dead. Trillo is true in his assertion that mentions and silences, remembrance and forgetting, have to be dialectically understood through their complementarity that unearths the unevenness of power and discourse. As to the question, why did Sanghiran Sambinisaya, which includes Norberto Romualdez, Iluminado Lucente, and Vicente de Vera, forget the Balangiga encounter of 1901? The answer lies in the subjectivity enfleshed by their poems. The tug of war between memory and forgetting is concomitant with the struggles of power that any nation endures. Thus, this archive of the forgetting speaks to us from a margin waiting to be invited and remembered. As such, Karl Marx's cryptic statement in the 18th Brumaire of Napoleon Bonaparte in 1852 saying, they cannot represent themselves, they must be represented, creates a distinct sensation, a chill in the spine. Balangiga has to be represented. Balangiga has to be remembered. Thank you very much.
Maraming salamat po, Sir Ian, sa isang napakagandang pagbabahagi niya sa amin. Pero ako bilang isang taal na Tagalog, dito kasi ako lumaki sa NCR. Ulit-ulitin ko lang, from the slums of Pasay City. So wala akong roots na wala akong sense ng pinanggagalingan ng probinsya. Medyo nakakahiya yun eh, kasi nga 'di ba pag bakasyon, mauwian ang mga probinsya noon. Pero ako, wala akong inuwi ang probinsya kasi dito lang kami sa NCR. Kaya yung mga ganitong discussion, refreshing siya sa akin. Kasi yung pagkaunawa ko ng mga literatures from the region ay base lang sa mga existing na literature na nababasa natin sa libro. Hindi rin ako maalam sa mga regional languages. Though nakakaintindi ako ng kaunting Bicol kasi both sides ng parents at grandparents ko ay galing sa Bicol, hindi naman ako nakakasalita. Maganda kasi na tayo bilang mga Pilipino, meron din ganun eh, merong alam na wikang mga regional na sa atin, pero yun nga, hindi ako marunong. Ang tanong ko, Sir Ian, about dun sa criticism ng mga ganitong bagay, parang meron ba kaming karapatan na, for example, bilang mga outsider, maging interested kami, aralin yung wika, and maging credible na critic or scholar ng ating mga regional literature na hindi namin kinabibilangan. Baka kasi sabihin ng iba, ay, sino ba yung mga yan? Parang ganun.
May karapatan naman kahit outsider, no, na pag-aralan, mag-observe, maki-intervene, no, maki-debate doon sa continuing progress at debates, no, na meron yung isang regional literature, no. Pero siguro dapat mag-ingat lang doon sa pag-exoticize o forms of essentialism, no. Ito naman na-explain na to ni Edward Said yung sinasabi ni Orientalism, 'di ba, yung gaze na tinatawag natin na na nalilibitahan yung identity ng isang kultura batay sa presumptions ng tagalabas. So dapat nating iwasan 'yun. Na magkaroon ng mga ganung forma ng exoticismo, no, essentialismo. So 'yun lang yung dapat pakiingatan.
Ayun. So, ako naman, una kong nalaman tong topic ng college ako. Pero sa Philippine History class, hindi literature. Alam niyo yung sikat na book na red? Yung History of the Filipino People textbook ni Teodoro Agoncillo. Yun yung pinabasa sa amin ng prof ko ng college eh, as our source book. Nabanggit dun yung encounter na sinasabi dito sa discussion. Yung kahit bata o babae, kasali sa papatayin kasi sinira, halos sinunog yung bayan. Tapos, yung pagganti ng mga Amerikano hanggang sa makarating sa puntong kinuha na ngayong Balangiga Bells, na recently, if I'm not mistaken, ay balik na ata. So, ang tanong ko naman, sa history kasi may impact, may political positioning yung pagkuha sa bells at sa pagkakabalik na ito na matagal nang usapin sa US Senate and military. Symbol kasi yun ng isang inkwentro sa gitna ng gera, remembrance o war souvenir na tinatawag. Ganun kahalaga sa parehas na kolonya at kinolonya yung paglagak ng political, historical at cultural value sa asset na yun. So sa ngayon, paano kaya naapektuhan ng kasalukuyang political climate yung waray literature? Madagdag ko lang din, no? Napanood ko din pala yung, naalala ko kasi dito yung, napanood ko yung Balangiga, yung Howling Wilderness ni Khan. Na ngayon parang mas naging malalim yung appreciation ko sa film na napakaganda naman kasi talaga.
Okay. Doon sa aspect nung pagkabalik na nung Balangiga, so toon ay balik na siya, pero yung critique of imperialism na meron tayo dati, dapat magpatuloy pa rin yun. Kasi, of course, totoo na yung Balangiga Bells ay metonym siya ng historical violence, ng American imperialism. Pero hindi dahil nabalik na siya sa Pilipinas, naghihilom ng lahat, okay na tayo, kakalimutan na lang natin yun, friends na ulit. Dapat pa rin maging critical tayo, especially sa panahon ngayon, di ba, na hindi lang Amerika ang nakikita nating nag-exercise ng imperialism, 'di ba? Nakikita natin yung China. So, mahalaga yung lesson ng Balangiga, no, para ipakita yung kapangyarihan nung dissent, no, na nanggagaling sa masa. No, so para sa akin, kahit nakabalik na yung Balangiga Bells, kailangan pa ring magpatuloy nung
critique at saka nung debate at ng discussion tungkol dito. Hindi lang tungkol sa Balangiga Bells, kundi doon sa sinisignify ng Balangiga Bells, no? Nakasama na dito yung kasaysayan at karahasan. Doon naman sa matter na paano na apektuhan ng issue ng Balangiga, no, yung current situation ng regional literature. Malaki epekto nito. Halimbawa, magandang example dito yung Running with Ghosts and Other Poems ni Merle Alunan, 2017 kung hindi ako nagkakamali. May isa siyang tula dito na pinapakita sa anthology na pinapakita na may circularity, may repetition yung forms of violence, no, na nakikita natin mula nung panahon ng Balangiga hanggang ngayon, no. In fact, doon sa tulang yon na naging example pa niya yung Ampatuan Massacre, no, as forms of continuing violence, no, na nakikita natin. At kung i-analyze natin mabuti, may isang continuous na threadbare ito lahat, no, related itong lahat na violence ito, kahit obviously parang hindi magkakalayo sila ng time and place, no, pero yung structurality ng lahat may relasyon sila. At mahalaga yung binibigay na initiative of discourse ng Balangiga Bells dito.
Mm-hmm. Ako naman, Sir Ian, ito po yung tanong ko. Kasi di ba laging sinasabi, narinig natin yung mga katagang, never forget. At malinaw sa discussion po ninyo yung politics, nuance, at power interplay dito in terms of literary production, writers' positioning on issues, and to some extent, yung so-called falling into an erratic criticism from no less than established critics. So yung tanong ko po siguro is, how important po kaya is it for us to remember or to never forget? Kasi sabi nga po nung ibang political analysts o yung mga ibang historian ngayon na at this juncture, we should veer away from the never forget chant or slogan, arguing that the enemy is now in front of us. So thus, the fight is right here and there is no need to forget, only persistent struggle against our oppressors. Tsaka in addition, how does the situation of our national politics in terms of forgetting, recalling, and even the culture of erratic policymaking na nakikita naman natin ngayon, affect the way our regional literature, not only po yung poetry, live or sadly perish? Medyo napahupyawan nyo naman po ito sa lecture, pero mas gusto ko lang po sigurong mas mag-focus dito para sa tanong ko.
Remembering and forgetting are forms of political commitment, di ba? Either way, may political implications itong dalawang ito. Doon sa statement na never forget, nagigets ko yung critique doon na nanggaling kasi ito sa problematic woke culture. Totoo naman, pero critical pa rin kasi yung hinihingi nung yung dialectic requirement nung never forget, no, na wag nating kalimutang i-historicize, 'di ba? Sabi nga ni Frederick Jameson, English critic, na always historicize. Yes, mahalaga na tingnan yung nakaraan at kung ano yung relation nito sa ngayon. Nagigets ko kasi yung critique against never forget, na parang ang point ay tingnan yung problem according to the urgency, the current urgency na meron tayo para mas maging alarm tayo. Pero para sa akin, mas may depth, mas may lalim, mas may gravitas yung protest at yung critique kung nakikita natin yung continuity ng violence, yung pagiging ancient nito, no? Kung naalala natin yung French ay may term sila na ancient regime. Ibig sabihin yung ancient regime, yung mga nakagawian, yung mga dati. Ibig sabihin, coming from that notion of the old and the new, 'di ba, yung relation ng old at new. May relevant yung notion of continuity, relevant yung notion of period, yung duration, yung longevity doon sa existence ng isang political violence, no, nakakaapekto sa atin and renders us vulnerable. Malaki yung effect nung current regime or any political order na meron tayo ngayon doon sa existing breed of writers, no. Critical na matingnan yung political subjectivity na meron sila, mas lalo na marami sa mga regional writers ay nagiging complicit sa mga forms of regime, sa regime of violence na meron tayo ngayon. So diba, ito nabasa ko dati kay Jaya Jacobo na laging sinasabi natin na the author is dead, diba? Naihiwalay natin yung text mula doon sa political subjectivity or subjectivity in general na meron yung isang author. Pero inextricable siya eh, kasi at the end of the day, yung agreement, yung complicity ng isang writer with his or her intimacy with power and politics has something to do with the text, no? And enfleshed kasi doon sa text yung violence, yung complicity niya, no? So lahat yun ay magkakadugtong-dugtong, walang severance na nagaganap, walang compartmentalization, lahat ito ay isang discursive formation. Yun.
Okay, so maraming salamat po, Sir Ian. Grabe, napakarami po nating natutunan. I'm sure kayo, Will, Casey, at yung mga nakikinig sa atin ngayon dun sa mga sinabi ni Sir Ian at sa kanyang lecture. At maraming salamat po sa pagsagot po sa aming mga tanong.
Oo nga, Sir Ian, salamat. At gusto ko lang din sabihin na napakahalaga talaga ng paglikha ng mga akdang may kinalaman sa mga kasalukuyang nangyayari, yung pagtatala nito. Dahil hindi tayo papayag na makalimutan na lang mga to, lalo na ngayon sa kapanahunan ng historical revisionism. Anyway, Sir Ian, meron po ba kayong gustong i-promote na project or event or anything na gusto niyong sabihin sa ating mga listeners?
Okay. Gusto ko lang i-expound yung statement sa final quote ko doon sa lecture, yung statement ni Karl Marx na they cannot represent themselves, they must be represented. Controversial itong statement na ito kasi parang implication ay dinidisempower ni Karl Marx, no, yung masses, for instance. Pero nagiging relevant siya sa diskusyon ng remembering at forgetting, no? Especially dahil wala na dito yung mga biktima ng Balangiga encounter. At tayo nandito naman, may resources tayo, may archive tayo, may current discussions, may literary representation na nagpapaalala sa atin na nangyari ito. So, ibig sabihin lang nun, may crucial task yung ating post-memorial generation, sabi nga ni Marian Hirsch, no? Na may post-memorial obligation tayo na continually, no, ang pag-usapan ito, i-represent ito sa kung ano man ginagawa nating creative production nang hindi makalimutan dahil mahalaga ito sa identity natin bilang tao, no, at bilang isang bansa. Yun. At doon naman sa pagpla-plug, dahil ako ay culture editor ng squeeze.ph, no, open kami for contributions, any form of contributions, articles, literary work, reviews, tinatanggap namin yung feature, political commentaries, tinatanggap namin yun. So mag-email lang sa info@squeeze.ph. Again, info@squeeze.ph.
Ayun, speaking of announcement, may announcement din pala ako. May open call for contribution ang Likhaan, the University of the Philippines Institute of Creative Writing. Ito ang Philippine Literature in the Time of COVID-19, Volume 1. Open po yan hanggang August 31, 2020. Bisitahin nyo na lang po ang kanilang official Facebook page or mag-email sa likhaandx@gmail.com. Thank you din po pala dun sa luto ni Lina, nagpadala sa atin ng Espasalat Dico. Solid yun. Follow nyo po sila sa Facebook. Search nyo lang po yung luto ni Lina.
Suportahan po natin ang Likhaan sa kanilang proyekto upang patuloy na masiyasat at may isadokumento ang mga pangyayari sa kabila ng at kahit na may pandemya. Bukas pa rin po sila sa pagtanggap din ng mga kontribusyon para sa kanilang Filipiniana online library. Mababasa niyo po dito ng libre ang iba't ibang mga akda ng mga manunulat sa iba't ibang bahagi ng Pilipinas.
Panoorin din po natin ang Stranded na available na po ngayon sa Netflix for streaming. Nag-contribute po dito ng script ang aming kaibigan na si Pence Baterna. So, supportahan po natin yan.
Follow niyo rin po kami sa aming Instagram at Lit Junction Podcast. Wala pong space. Pakifollow rin po kami sa Spotify, Lit Junction. Ganun din po sa Apple Podcasts. Rate nyo rin po kami doon sa Apple ng 5 stars para makapagpatuloy po kami sa aming mga programa.
Muli, maraming salamat sa mga nakinig sa amin sa episode na to. Maraming salamat sa aming guest, Sir Ian, at sa lahat ng mga nag-follow sa amin at tumutulong sa artwork at iba pa naming online promotions.
Ako pala gusto ko rin personal na magpasalamat sa National Commission for Cultural and the Arts sa kanilang Philippine Cultural Education Program, Katuwang Ambaras Win Kalinangan Foundation Incorporated. Katatapos ko lang kasing magsanay sa kanila ng 5 araw na National Retooling of University Professors of Filipino para sa pagpapahalaga sa sining. Ito kasi yung programa nila para dun sa mga Filipino courses na tinanggal na sa kolehiyo. So yun, binigyan kami ng choices ng mga general education courses na pwedeng ituro. Napili ko yung art appreciation para magka-art naman ako sa katawan. At salamat sa aming magaling na trainer, si Dr. John Eremil Teodoro ng Literature Department ng De La Salle University at kay Ma'am Estelita Gatmaita ng aming course facilitator. Sa wakas natapos ko to at hinihintay ko na lang ang aking certificate.
Okay, congrats Will at salamat din Casey. And bilang pagtugon sa isang napakagandang talakayan natin ngayong gabi, narito naman ang aking maikling konklusyon. Madalas isinasantabi o ipinaghihiwalay natin ang maraming bagay na akala kasi natin hindi magkakaugnay. Pero ang usapin ng sining, panitikan, kultura at politika ay magkakabigkis. Ito ang napatunayan maging sa iba-ibang panahon. Tulad ng pagyabong ng panitikang Tagalog, sabi ng iba, kwentong Tagalog noong panahon ng Hapon, mga panitikang nilikha noong panahon ng diktadoryang Marcos na nagbunsod ng pagyaman ng protest literature sa Pilipinas, andyan din ang Wattpad writing culture na popular sa mga mag-aaral at kabataan, paghahanap sa pambansang panitikan, paggamit sa sining bilang deodorizing agent ng Estado, pagiging national artist pa nga ng isang CIA-funded artist, pagdatanggal ng Filipino at panitikan sa pagtuturo sa antas kolehiyo, na mismo ang ating kataas-taasang hukuman ang nagpatibay nito, o maging ang away-away sa mga bloke ng manunulat at institusyong pangkultura at panitikan. Kitang-kita sa mga ito ang paghihilahan, pagpabor, pangmamaliit, paggamit at maging ang pagbabaliwala, pagsasantabi at paglimot. Itong aral dito, na sa pagsusulong ng panitikang sariling atin, marami tayong mga dapat pa ring alalahanin. Hindi madaling limutin ang mga mapapait na karanasang personal at karanasan ng isang bansa. Pero sabi sa panayam, may kailangang katawanin, may kailangang alalahanin. At sa akto ng pag-aalala, ng lagi at laging pag-alala, nagagawa nating mag-ambag sa mga bagay na pilit binubura o nire-revisa ng sino mang may hawak ng kapangyarihan.
Salamat Eugene sa napakaganda rin conclusion ngayong episode. Ayun, i-announce ko lang na ang ating episode 9 and 10 ay guesting series pa rin po. By episode 11 ay babalik na po tayo sa ating reading series.
Muli, maraming salamat po sa ating guest ngayon, Sir Ian Harvey Claros. At sa mga minamahal naming tagapakinig. Okay, so kung wala na talaga, ito na po muna. Muli, ito ang Lit Junction Podcast, hosted by yours truly with Casey and Will, podcasting for your literary stopover every Sunday night.
Bye, paalam
po sa inyo lahat.
Bukas diyan din aking matatanaw sa sandipang langit na wala ng luha, sisikat ang gintong araw ng tagumpay, layang sasalubong ako sa paglaya.
Junction Podcast 2020 is brought to you by The Escaping Chaos Productions with Eugene Soyosa as host and editor, Casey Victoria as co-host and producer, and Wilmer Pache III as writer and associate producer. For comments, feedback, and podcast collaboration, email the group via lit.junction2020@gmail.com.